Pesach is fast approaching. This holiday is very central to women, and I don't mean doing the cleaning. If you look at the original story in the Chumash of Shemot, clearly women play a central role. From the birth of Moshe with the courageous midwives who saved Jewish children, to Moshe's mother who knew how to what she needed to do to save his life, to his sister who watched over him, to Bat Paro who raised him, and to Miriam again, who was a leader of the Jewish people. Women helped birth the nation and were an essential part of the experience of being redeemed from Egypt. We see this also in the mitzvot of the day. Women are obligated to the main mitzvot of the Seder. They were required to eat matzah. For matzah, even though it is a positive mitzvah caused by time from which women are normally exempt, matzah, as we know, is intrinsically linked to the negative commandment not to eat chametz, and women are obligated in all negative commandments, so they are also obligated in the flipped positive side of matzah. They are obligated in the remitting commandments of drinking the 4 cups of wine at the Seder, because for they too were involved in the miracle. And this reason is also applied to the recitation of Hallel at the Seder. But all that is not what I want to talk about. What I'd like to talk about with you today is a slightly less sexy topic, less well-known topic, and then that is the question of, are women required to lean at the Seder? Now, I know if you were to list your top 10 major burning issues about the status of women in Judaism, leaning at the Seder wouldn't be up there, right? We have debates about can women be witnesses? What's with the problem of the agonot? Can women read from the Torah? Can they count in a minyan? No one is talking about the question of women leaning at the Seder. And you might ask why I want to do this, but I want to because I'd like to show you that it's actually a fascinating case study. First of all, it's a very interesting example about the interplay between human reality and the possibility of change within human reality and how that affects the practice of halacha. And secondly, more specific to the status of women, this question really gives us a window into the thought of Chazal on what women's status was and their perceptions of that status, and also into the continuing texts of the later rabbinic authorities on how they characterized women's place and her role. Okay, so you might ask, what am I talking about? What does this have to do with leaning at the Seder? So I would ask you, why do we lean at the Seder? I think you can even ask a child in kindergarten this question, and I'm sure you're all calling out to show that we're free, to show that we're like kings, that we're not slaves to Pharaoh anymore. And this is exactly correct. The Yerushalmi in Masechet Pesachim first explains this reasoning. And the name of Rabbi Levi, and it says, it is the way of slaves to eat while they're standing up. Presumably, they always have to be on the run in the beck and call of their masters. Kan, right, nowadays, we're eating reclining. Lehodia shiyotzu mi'avdut l'chirut. To show everyone and ourselves that we left slavery and are now free. That is why we lean. And what is fascinating is right here on the next lines of this Gemara, after they state, therefore you should eat the matzah while leaning, Rav Yossi comes before Rabbi Simon and asks a very interesting question. He asks, wait a second, what about an eved? What about a slave? Lifnei rabo, in the presence of his master. Afilu isha lifnei ba'ala, even a woman in the presence of her husband? What is he asking? What is he asking when he says, wait, what about these categories of people? And I think when you think about the Seder experience, the whole purpose of that evening is so that we ourselves should feel as if we left Mitzrayim, right? Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo ke'ilu hu yatzah Mitzrayim. That we have an obligation to see ourselves as if we went out of Egypt, which is a very, very high and lofty expectation. How do we go about doing that? And the whole, all the accoutrements, the things that accompany the Seder are served to serve that purpose. We're really trying to act out the experience and feel it in our bodies in a very tangible way. How do we go about doing that? We eat maror and we experience the feeling of the bitter lives the Jews had in Egypt. We drink cups of wine. So by the time we get to midnight and are singing the Hallel, Betzei Israel Mimitzrayim, we are experiencing that euphoria of the geula, of the redemption. Everything we do at the Seder is to make the experience of redemption and freedom something real, something tangible, something that I'm experiencing right now. And the leading is very much part of that role play. I recline and I feel as if I own the world. But now Rabbi Yossi asks, wait a second, how could I feel that feeling if my reality right now, when I'm sitting at the Seder, is completely different? My experience as a human being, if I'm a slave at my master's table, is completely different from that. I can't pretend. It's one thing to try to create this feeling and reach another a plane of existence, but if my real existence right now is diametrically opposite to that, it's not going to work so well. And we can clearly understand that with the slave at his master's table, but it seems to be that by asking about the woman at the husband's table, without articulating it, Rabbi Yossi assumes a similar situation, that there's something in the hierarchical relationship between husband and wife, that human reality would be diametrically opposed to the experience of reclining and feeling free. Interestingly, in the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Simon doesn't have an answer. He says, up until here is what Rabbi taught me. Ad kan shamati. I don't know. I don't know what to do with those situations, which is an interesting thing in itself. I always appreciate when the rabbis admit when they don't know something. It's an important lesson for all of us. The Babylonian Talmud, on the other hand, does know the answer to this question, and it addresses a few other situations where there's a disproportional relationship between the people and should those people recline. It talks about a child at the parents' table, it talks about a student at the teacher's table, and it talks about a woman as well. And in Masechet Pesachim on 108a, it says the following in the printed text of the Talmud. Isha etzel ba'ala lo ba'i haseba. A woman in the presence near her husband is not required to lean. And I say in the printed text because if you look in the manuscripts and if you look at the language in the Rishonim, it's quite clear that the original text actually just said Isha lo ba'e haseba, that a woman is not required to lean, and the addition of in the presence of her husband is added later on due to the comments and the understanding that we're going to see in a moment of what the reasoning is. The Bach points this out, that it entered as a scribal error into the text. And we're going to see what this means in a second. So we first have a woman is not required to lean, and then the text continues. It says, "V'im isha chashuvahi tzricha haseba," and if she is an important woman, she needs to lean. Now we don't yet know what these two categories mean, but it's just interesting to pause and recognize the fact that the rabbis understand that there are different types of women, and different types of women might have different realities, and those realities might play out in a way that her participation in ritual might therefore be different. So, if we were to look at other texts from the same time period in the Talmud that talk about an Isha Chashuvah, we can get a little window into understanding at least something about her. One of the most famous texts is a text in Masechet Shabbat, and it talks about a woman who has an ear shel zahav. It seemed to be some type of pin or jewelry adornment that was a golden city, possibly the golden city of Yerushalayim. And the question is, can she wear this pin outside in the public domain on Shabbat? And the concern seems to be, there's a disagreement. The concern seems to be, what if she undoes the pin and therefore carries it? And then she would have violated or transgressed Shabbat. And so the view that says it's no problem is a view of Rabbi Eliezer, and he says, who wears a golden pin? Only an Isha Chashuvah wears a golden pin, I presume, because it costs a lot of money. And he says, no Isha Chashuvah would take off her pin to show it to her friend. Implication, that's beneath her. Someone of wealth who has beautiful things doesn't need to show them off and take them off. She wears them naturally with pride. It would be beneath her dignity to start taking it off in the Reshut HaRabim to show people. That's not how you carry yourself. So I think there's a similar discussion about a special wreath or jewelry piece that hung down on her forehead. that an Isha Chashuva would wear. And in Masachet Ketubot, there's a discussion that clearly an Isha Chashuva comes from a Chashuva family, an important family, clearly one of Yichas. And it seems clear from the simple reading of these texts that an Isha Chashuva is linked to wealth, linked to status in the community. Those two things are linked. And the question is, how does this relate to her need to lean or not? The Gaonim in the She'iltot follow this logic of reasoning and discuss that somehow the status of a woman relates to what her general practice was in meals. Only these high-class women drink wine and recline when they drink wine, and therefore it's appropriate behavior. And he makes a class distinction vis-a-vis drinking of wine, and that would relate to reclining. The majority of the Rosh Hashanim don't go that way, and I want to focus on their view. They seem to understand that this has something to do with the relationship between the husband and the wife. And let me explain why they say a woman doesn't need to recline, and then we'll understand possibly how they understand what an important woman is. The Rashbam, right there on the page of the Talmud, he's commenting here on the end of Pesachim because unfortunately Rashi passed away before he could complete his commentary and his grandson took over. He says the following: why does a woman need to lean? Because of the fear of her husband, and she is subservient to him. Aha. So her reality right there at the table with her husband is one of fear and subservience. There's no way it would make sense for her to play out a drama of her being free. Right? The Meiri continues on the similar theme. He says there's no freedom for a woman in the presence of her husband. And the Ran, who's slightly later historically, although and still in the Middle Ages, says, well, she's going to be serving her husband, and therefore she is not free. So all these explanations understand that the woman's relationship to her husband is diametrically opposed to the experience of freedom. She's someone who is subservient. She's someone who is serving. She is someone who is not free. And therefore, to require her to do something that is really impossible and feel the feeling that's really impossible is not the case. And the halakha does not require her to lean. The Rosh immediately points out on this, therefore it makes sense to say that someone who is a widow or a divorcee would be required to lean, and that is how the halakha plays out. And so from this context, we need to now have a definition of what is an isha chashuva, what is an important woman. And the Rabbeinu Manoach offers three suggestions. His first one fits directly into this. He says, well, that would be a woman who doesn't have a husband, who's the head of her own household. She, of course, would need to lean. She doesn't have a husband there to be subservient. She is a self-leading. She's the head of the household. She's in charge. She would need to lean. He then makes two other suggestions. One is a practical suggestion. Maybe an isha chashuva is someone who still has a husband. However, she's very wealthy and therefore has many servants and slaves who take care of the food preparation and take care of the house. And so she's not concerned with that. And so the feeling of freedom or non-freedom is linked to her requirements and her duties. And when someone else is taking over them, she can feel more relaxed and experience the feeling of freedom. He has a third explanation that is really quite fascinating. He says, or possibly, shehi chashuva b'pri yadeha, bat gedolei hador, eshet chayel yirat Hashem. Possibly she's important in her own right, from the works of her hands, from the deeds that she does. It's a little bit funny, he then adds that who would be such a woman would be a daughter of the leaders of the generation. But she is an eshet chayel. She's a woman of valor in her own right, who fears God. And she has made herself important by her own behaviors and who she is as a person. Interestingly, the Meiri, who said there is no freedom for a woman in the presence of her husband, explains that an isha chashuva is one who does not have shifchut be'ishut shela, that doesn't have subservience or serving in her marriage. And so I don't know if this relates to because she has many other servants to do it for her, or because the dynamic of the relationship between husband and wife is where the husband recognizes her and values her in her own right for who she is and her behaviors. But now we have a different explanation of isha chashuva that is done in the context between what is the relationship between the husband and wife. Very interestingly, really extraordinarily interestingly, is the Tosafists, quite early on, make a fascinating statement. They say, Dinashim didan chashuvot ninhu. Our women are considered important. Therefore, when they're in the presence of their husband, they lean. And they make this sweeping statement, the Tosafists, that all the women they know are important. Now, it can't possibly be that everyone they know is wealthy and has status and has servants, I presume, because I don't think that's how it was in Ashkenaz in those time periods. So rather, it must apply to our other definition of chashuva, that there is something has changed at this time period in the attitude that men have for women and that husbands have for wives. And there's some appreciation that this relationship is not one of hierarchy, but possibly one of where we look at the woman in her own right. I'm sure it's not the same as what we're talking about when I would use those terms in the modern day, but it clearly is a change. And therefore, that change means the exceptional has become the norm. All women now are required to lean. But fascinatingly, when we look at the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, he codifies the law that a woman doesn't need to lean and an Isha Chashuva does need to lean. And then Rav Moshe Iserlis, the Ashkenazi gloss to the Shulchan Aruch, comes along and says, V'chol ha'nashim shalanu mikre chashuvot. All our women are called chashuvot, but he says women don't have a custom to lean. They don't have a custom to lean because they rely on the opinion of the Rav Yah that said, in nowadays, we don't need to lean. And Rav Moshe Iserlis, in his commentary to the Torah, said it a little bit differently. He said, I never have seen in my day any women who lean. So it must be that they have a custom to be lenient according to the Rav Yah. Aha. So what's going on here? What's the opinion of the Rav Yah? The Rav Yah says that if the whole point of leaning is to show that we're free and we're being the way kings did, in our day and age, kings don't lean. Kings sit at the table, and leaning doesn't symbolize freedom anymore. So if we want this experience to create a feeling in our body that matches our understanding of reality, it doesn't make sense to lean anymore. We can feel free when we're not leaning because leaning doesn't symbolize freedom anymore. A very fascinating view, nothing to do with women, about the idea that our human experience and our perception of reality should affect how we play out ritual. That being said, it seems to be that the Rama is struggling with something. He sees that women don't lean, yet he knows they're all chashuvot and they're supposed to be leaning. So he's sort of trying to say that they're relying on the Rav Yah. I find it pretty unlikely that most of the women had learned the Rav Yah and decided to follow him. Possibly they thought in their minds, this doesn't make so much sense, or possibly they never were informed or didn't really get the memo that they're all chashuvot now. And I say that a little jokingly, but that is something similar to what the Aruch HaShulchan says. The Aruch HaShulchan says, wait a second, don't start telling me that the women are following the Rav Yah, that nowadays people don't lean to represent freedom. Because if that was the case, why don't men follow the Rav Yah, right? Meaning, if we're really going to accept this idea, then men should do it as well. Why were only women doing it? So he says something very interesting. He says, "Vafilu im hi chashuva, eino uchzeket atzma ken." Even if she actually really was an important woman, she doesn't consider herself as such, which I found to be a really interesting psychological insight. I think, unfortunately, I speak for myself about women. Sometimes we find some very, very important women who don't present themselves as such for good, which could be that I'm not against being humble, but also don't realize their worth and don't appreciate their worth and don't demand there to be treated for what they are worth. And so he makes this very, very interesting statement that it's possible that they're chashuvot, but they just don't consider themselves to be that. Okay, so we're coming towards the end, and I want to sort of say, what have we learned from all of this? What can we see? And it seems to be that, as we saw in the earlier text, there was a clear understanding that women's status was linked to how her status was in the marital relationship. And that was one of not of equality, but of inequality and hierarchy. And that affected the question of how she would participate in this ritual of leaning and reclining. Once her status changed, or even in the time of Chazal, where there was a perception that there were some women who had a different status, her relationship to the ritual would be different. And we're at the sort of at the core, basic, most central question: are women free? Are they free functioning agents? And therefore, how does that play out in their experience at the Seder night? And this leads us to a much larger question that clearly I can't talk about in full here, but I'm going to leave it for you, some food for thought as you're doing your Pesach cleaning and preparing for the Seder. There are many mitzvot that we know about where the rabbis tell us the reason why women are exempt from them. It's many mitzvot women are exempt for because nashim avadim uktanim, women, slaves, and minors are exempt from those mitzvot. And why are women, slaves, and minors put together in the same category? They're put together in the same category because all of them are in the domain of someone else. They're underneath someone else's authority. Dare I even use the word subservient to them in the way that the Rashbam did, right? Obviously, slaves are subservient to their masters or in the domain of their masters. Minors, let's say, are in the domain of their father. And women here, it seems, means specifically women who are in the domain of their husbands. Nashim is not a word that generally talks about someone who is genetically female, but rather a specific type of woman. And therefore, if we were to look at this very seriously and imagine, let's say, women, slaves, and minors are exempt from saying the Shema. And there the Yerushalmi explains, well, why is a slave exempt from saying the Shema? Because how can a slave accept the yoke of heaven when he has another master, right? Similar to our leaning at the Seder, that would be a farce. The whole purpose of making this faith statement is to say, God, I am subservient to you. I live in Malchut Shamayim. I live in your domain. And a slave, that's a farce. We don't expect the slave. We exempt the slave from this requirement. So too would seem to be the logic for women and minors in that same case, since they were linked together that way in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah doesn't explain to us any reason but the fact women, slaves, and minors are exempt from Shema. And therefore, presumably, something about their status in this category is the cause of their exemption, as the Yerushalmi explicitly said from slaves, and seems to follow from what we have just learned about women's status. And so I put out for you as something to think about in the future, if the rabbis were able to reevaluate women's status vis-a-vis the question of her freedom and leaning, and understand that possibly there are other categories of women besides those who are subservient to their husbands. Should this lead us to possibly reevaluate some other performances of ritual by women? I know that's a very radical statement and it needs a lot of fleshing out, but I will leave it to you to start thinking about. And so, when I am sitting there at the Seder night and leaning on my pillow and encouraging my children, both male and female, to lean, not only will I be experiencing the feeling of freedom and redemption from the hardship of Mitzrayim, but also I will be embracing the feeling of freedom I feel as a important woman whose status has changed, feeling the freedom of knowing that I am no longer in a hierarchical relationship in which I am subservient to someone else. And thanking God that this reality has changed from the days of old. And I encourage you, women and men who are in the lives of those women, to also embrace your status as an Isha Chashuva, of an important woman, and not to belittle your accomplishments and your worth and the respect you deserve. And lean on the Seder night, and possibly consider embracing your status in other areas as well. Chag Kasher V'Sameach.